Welcome to Advanced Nuclear, the official podcast of UCAN Power, where leading experts, innovators, and policymakers explore the latest developments shaping the future of nuclear energy.
Welcome to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Howe, for UCAN Power. We advocate for bringing cutting-edge nuclear technologies to market to bolster our energy and national security, and in this podcast, we talk to the movers and shakers in this vital industry. Look, nuclear energy is on a roll in America and around the world. The industry is firing on all cylinders, and dozens of companies, with more springing up just about every day, are developing new and unique nuclear technologies and deployment concepts. The federal government's on board, with Congress passing some essential legislation and President Trump recently issuing four executive orders to accelerate nuclear deployment in the U.S. and to catalyze American nuclear exports. Meanwhile, private sector capital is flowing more freely to support nuclear projects. Public support for nuclear power is strong and growing. And Wall Street has given nuclear a big thumbs up, with many nuclear companies seeing a major rise in their valuation. All the signs are there for a nuclear resurgence in America. Nowhere is this more obvious than in Texas. Over the past 3 years, the Lone Star State has shown that it is serious in attracting nuclear companies and supporting them in their research, development, and deployment. As we'll hear in this episode, Texas has made a major investment in nuclear energy, and nuclear startups, large and small, are flocking to the state. Our guest today is at the epicenter of this whirlwind of activity and has a unique viewpoint with which to give us the lowdown on the nuclear resurgence in Texas. Reed Clay is the founding president of the Texas Nuclear Alliance, and he brings a distinguished career in law and government. He's a lawyer, educated at Wake Forest and Duke, and served in the U.S. Justice Department as a trial attorney in the commercial litigation branch. He then held high positions in the Texas Attorney General's office and served Governor Greg Abbott as an advisor, deputy chief of staff, and as the state's chief operating officer. In 2018, he left for the private sector and has been with the Texas Nuclear Alliance since 2022. So, Reed, thank you for joining us on the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. We're grateful you could share your insights with us.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me. This is obviously a topic we love, and we appreciate you getting the message out.
Well, look, let's just start with you a little bit. You have a unique backstory when it comes to serving in state government. You know, how did this lead you to becoming a champion for the nuclear industry?
Man, that's a long story. I'll try to keep it short. When I left state government, I've started, a government, pretty traditional government affairs consulting business called Crestline Group, which is, you know, the other business I run alongside the Texas Nuclear Alliance. And one of my very early projects was working on the low-level radioactive waste facility in West Texas. That facility is an interstate compact with Vermont that Texas has, and it, you know, disposes of Vermont's low-level radioactive waste, Texas's low-level radioactive waste, and it also disposes of out-of-compact waste as well. The politics around that site are, you know, what the politics, unfortunately, have been around nuclear for, you know, many decades. And so I was exposed to, you know, sort of the anti-nuke crowd and the anti-nuke politics. I think part of my interest at that point was, you know, I think just professional and academic, in the sense that I was curious about it. When Uri happened, I think my interest in, growing my knowledge around the Texas grid and how we, you know, handle our power needs here kind of merged with the strange politics of nuclear. One of the things that, you know, obviously I noticed when I, you know, looked under the hood of the Texas grid after Winter Storm Uri was that we hadn't built nuclear in several decades here. I saw that as a very unfortunate, omission on our part as a state. And, you know, come to find out that was an omission on a lot of people's part around the country. And so I think, you know, basically, you know, I think what I gathered was a lot of the reason that we weren't building nuclear was the strange and, you know, frankly, wrong-footed politics around nuclear, and no one was advocating for the industry. You know, that's kind of what I, you know, do for a living. And I just noticed that there was nobody advocating for nuclear. And, you know, my wife calls it a midlife crisis, but, you know, I decided that I, no one else was doing it, I would do it. I wasn't sure I was the right person to do it, but no one else was doing it. So we started the Nuclear Alliance about 3.5 years ago. Finished 2023 with, you know, it was just me and Lauren, along my side, at that time. And then 2024, we picked up about, we closed the year with about 24 members. And then, you know, through the first half of this year, we've got over, you know, 50 members, which, you know, reflects what you were saying at the beginning, Jim, just how fast and furious this sort of renaissance is happening before us. And I, you know, like you said, I think Texas is at the epicenter and is likely to remain there for quite some time. So that's kind of the story about how we got started and where we sit today.
So you said 50 members, like 50.
Yeah, over 50.
That's the pretty good growth, Reed. That's excellent. And you can find, our listeners can find more information at texasnuclearalliance.org. I encourage you to check that out. Let's go back, though, just a few years, talk about what I call the Glatfelter Commission. It's more formally known as the Texas Advanced Nuclear Reactor Working Group, and was headed by Public Utilities Commissioner Jimmy Glatfelter. Why was this formed, and who was involved in that?
Yeah, I think, you know, all the credit goes to the governor and his vision. I think, you know, he kind of ahead of the curve. You know, when we look back over the last couple of years at where, you know, the political landscape has changed on nuclear, you know, he was, you know, kind of a front runner, you know, as is typical for him. I think, you know, that's kind of the key to his success as, you know, one of the longest serving governors of this state. And certainly, you know, the state's success mirrors, you know, his leadership. And so he, you know, I think he saw, you know, the need. I think, you know, we all kind of after Uri understood that we had frankly overbuilt wind in particular. We, you know, all of the new net generation in ERCOT was intermittent resources. There was no dispatchable energy. There was dispatchable energy added, but that was offset by retirements. And, you know, I think he saw the need and the opportunity, frankly, to accomplish two things at once, which is, I think, bring dispatchable energy to the state of Texas, which, you know, is going to need massive amounts of energies. And I think he also saw a potential economic development opportunity, which is, you know, frankly, taking place before, you know, right before his eyes now. And so he, you know, he called that commission, directed PUC and specifically Commissioner Glatfelter to look into how the state of Texas could be more, open its doors to the nuclear energy and support the regrowth of the industry. And obviously, you know, Jimmy and, you know, the industry came together, you know, over the course of, I guess, about 15 months and put a lot of work in, published a report that he actually unveiled at our first ever nuclear summit last November, with, you know, a suite of recommendations on things the state could do to, you know, become the leader in nuclear. And so, you know, that report and the work of the governor's working group is what, you know, we really just spent the last 5 months putting into action with the legislature in session starting in January. And then they just closed out their session on June 2nd. So I think his vision there, I think we're already seeing what foresight he had in accomplishing that, just because of the way the industry is taking off, you know, around the world, frankly. And, you know, I think the more time goes on, the more, you know, he's going to, you know, the wisdom of his decision to create that commission and to push nuclear is going to be more and more apparent. And, you know, frankly, it's going to benefit Texas greatly that he took the early stance that he did on nuclear.
Well, you know, for those of us who were involved in some of the working groups for that commission, I've got to commend, you know, Commissioner Glatfelter and the whole team, because it was thorough. It was very, you know, informative. They brought in really, really experts to talk about certain issues to make sure they weren't just kind of swagging things, so to speak. And I think they put out a very solid list of recommendations. So this, as you said, is now turned into legislation. The primary legislation was House Bill 14. There was some other legislation as well, but HB 14 has some really important things in it. Could you kind of talk us through the highlights of HB 14?
Yeah, the first thing I'll say is you're exactly right. I mean, Commissioner Glatfelter is, you know, he's an intellectually curious person, which, you know, and he's a you know, an amazingly hard worker. And the two of those things combined really were a lot of the success of the commission, because I don't think he left any rock, stoned uncovered. Is I'm not sure that's the right expression, but yeah, he looked under every stone. How about that? And, you know, and I think he had a lot of good industry partners alongside him to help him with that. And the end product is obviously, you know, a direct byproduct of, you know, his curiousness, his thoroughness, and how much effort he put into the product. The recommendations were great. You know, most of them were implemented this past session. HB 14 encompasses several of them, including the establishment of the Texas Advanced Nuclear Energy Office. We did not have an office that was really dedicated to the promotion of nuclear energy. I think, you know, to rebuild the industry, something like that was necessary. It's really not a new regulatory body. I would view it as its mission and goal is really to promote the nuclear industry by, I think, getting nuclear companies to move to the state of Texas, and then certainly through the deployment of new nuclear. So that office also will include a permitting officer. Again, I think that is not designed to be to add bureaucracy. It's really designed to help the industry troubleshoot whatever state permits they need in order to deploy nuclear. And I think also to advocate to the NRC and the federal regulators for, you know, Texas specific projects. The last thing that the legislature did, and probably the most important, is they created a reimbursement grant program to bring, you know, really to incentivize and seed new nuclear projects in the state of Texas. It, you know, is comprised of three different tiers. Those tiers, you know, loosely follow the development and deployment process. And then the legislature provided an initial funding of $350 million for that grant program. So, you know, which is by far the largest, you know, investment that any state has made so far. And so, you know, we think that is going to, you know, Texas, I think, has a lot of built-in advantages, you know, not the least of which is its sort of accommodating regulatory environment, efficient regulatory environment, you know, low tax environment. And certainly, you know, as important probably is it's a huge demand center, particularly for the type of uses that new nuclear is likely to be used for. And so we were already seeing some interest, obviously, before the big investment from the legislature. But I think this investment is going to make it, you know, all the more likely that Texas is really going to be the leader in the U.S. for new nuclear.
Would it be fair to characterize the permitting officer as someone who almost acts as like a Sherpa to kind of help guide a company through all the various mazes of regulatory and permitting in the state? Is that fair to say?
Exactly. That's exactly what I think it's designed to do. Sherpa, you know, through the state regulatory process, and sort of a one-stop shop for a project to go to and say, hey, what do we need to do? And to help them through that process. And then I think the second component is to be an advocate, you know, with the NRC and, you know, the DOE at the federal level to, you know, make sure that the Texas projects are going to be successful.
Right. And as far as the $350 million, you kind of hinted that maybe there'll be more in future years. Is that kind of the expectation or possibility at least? And do you know how they plan to distribute those funds? Is it going to be cost share? Is it going to be a pure grant? How's that going to work? Mm-hmm. Any ideas?
Yeah, I think certainly our hope is that the $350 million is an initial investment. I mean, that's what we're saying. You know, I think the legislature, we had initially asked for, you know, frankly, a lot more money than that, you know, to really do this right. We thought we needed a bigger investment. But I think the legislature, you know, they're you know, very responsible with taxpayer money. And, you know, I think what they want to see is that the program is going to serve the purpose that we think it will serve. And if we are able to demonstrate the success of the program, and frankly, the return on investment for taxpayers, then I think the legislature is going to feel much more comfortable and continuing to contribute to that grant program so that the Texas can continue to attract new nuclear projects. So I do think it's an initial investment, not a one-time investment. In terms of how it's sort of structured, it is a cost share program. We wanted to see companies with skin in the game. We think projects are only going to be successful. Well, maybe not only will be successful with skin in the game, but we think the likelihood that a project will be successful comes with investment from the private, from private industry, risk capital at stake. So that was a requirement. And it will also act as a reimbursement program. So it will cover actual expenses, not sort of an upfront grant program. And I think that, again, is designed to, and it will, every project as part of the grant agreement will have sort of built-in milestones that will, condition the reimbursement on hitting those milestones. And those are all three of those sort of characteristics of the program are, again, sort of built-in features to make sure that the projects are successful. You know, we believe that an accountable program is going to be a successful program. So that's kind of how it's structured. Now, like I said, it's tiered. The first tier really is for kind of early site work, engineering, tech work, some pre-application funding. The second tier we're calling sort of the application and construction phase. It's designed to help, sort of defray what has typically been very heavy cost of getting, a license from the NRC. And then, we also wanted to provide some capital for the procurement of long lead time items that, can really hinder and increase the cost of the actual construction project. So that's also in the third tier or the second tier. And then the third tier is styled, it's a completion bonus that is styled after the Texas Energy Fund, which was set up in 2023 by the legislature to incentivize dispatchable energy. That's a loan program with a completion bonus on the back end that is a, essentially a per megawatt bonus once the project is completed. Again, that the exact features of that specific tier are yet to be determined. The PUC is going to have to write rules on that. But again, that completion bonus is another element of, trying to bring some accountability to the program and make sure that the projects that come to Texas are going to be successful projects.
Well, I give you a lot of credit for adopting a milestone-based approach, because that seems to help catalyze smart investments by the private sector, smart development by the reactor developers. I know NASA has had a lot of success with milestone-based programs, so that's all good. But I would like to talk a little bit about some of the major things happening in Texas with various reactor developers. But first, just I got to throw this out there. The president just signed those four nuclear-focused executive orders. What's your view on them, and how well do they align with the direction that Texas is taking?
I think the energy that frankly, the Trump administration and the Biden administration before it have, sort of injected into the nuclear industry is one of the few bipartisan things that's going on in the Hill. And I think it's obviously a very extremely important thing for the country. You talked about this in the opening, but I mean, one of the reasons that, we are advocating so hard for nuclear is, what it means from an energy security and national security perspective. And I think if there's one theme that is running through the executive orders, I think it's a desire to create liftoff in our nuclear program again and become the world leader again, precisely to maintain the U.S. status as, energy secure and nationally secure. And those executive orders, making sure that we're rebuilding the fuel cycle, to utilizing our military bases, to reforming the NRC process, the one theme there is that we've got to build a lot of energy very quickly if we're going to compete with China on both being a leader in the export of nuclear energy to the developing world and our allies, and also in making sure that we're a leader in artificial intelligence. And that, you know, those executive orders, which we figured were coming in some capacity or another, you know, are, you know, something that we, you know, really wanted this nuclear fund to be in place in Texas to ensure that we secured not just a seat at the table for what the federal government is going to do, but, you know, a seat at the head of the table. And so really that fund was designed with the foresight that, you know, the federal government was really going to make a big investment, both, you know, with, you know, capital, but also with, you know, sort of regulatory change, you know, into the industry. And I think Texas, you know, is now well positioned to take advantage of those multiple orders, you know, both the utilization of existing federal sites for the siting of nuclear, the utilization of military bases. Obviously, Texas has a plethora of those. And then, you know, certainly we think when it comes to rebuilding the fuel cycle, you know, Texas is a manufacturing hub as it is. And, you know, I think, you know, we firmly believe that there's no reason that this, you know, the environment that has led Texas to be a leading manufacturing state is also going to be an environment that, on top of what we just done, you know, to specifically incentivize nuclear, is going to be a leader in terms of rebuilding, you know, the nuclear fuel cycle from, you know, we have vast uranium mines in South Texas. So, we could really own the whole fuel cycle here, from the mining to the enrichment to, you know, potential reprocessing down the road, which is obviously another subject of the executive orders. So, you know, those executive orders, I think, are a huge boon and work in tandem with what the state has done. And the combination of the two, I think, are going to be incredibly powerful for not only the industry, but for the state of Texas.
So a few years ago, I had the honor of visiting the Texas A&M Nuclear Engineering Department and seeing the work they do. It's very, very impressive. They're one of the best universities in the world when it comes to nuclear, all things nuclear. But they made a big announcement recently about deployments on their RELIS campus. Could you talk about that program and where you see it headed?
Yeah, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Chancellor Sharp, you know, who's retiring after an incredible, you know, career at both, you know, A&M system and before that in state government. You know, he, you know, as we were building the alliance, little did I know that, you know, he was thinking about nuclear and how, not just how his engineering program could continue and cement itself as the best nuclear engineering program in the country, but how they could lead in terms of innovation and in the development process of nuclear. So, you know, really bringing both the research side to this, but also the practical side of, you know, building a workforce and actually deploying nuclear. And, you know, he called me, you know, about a year and a half ago and said, "I hear you're the nuclear guy." I've known Chancellor for a long time. And I said, I guess de facto, I kind of am at this point. And he, you know, asked me to come down to College Station and we sat over lunch and he told me his plans, which, you know, is really to build a nuclear proving ground at the RELIS campus. And, you know, one of the things you can, you know, one of the keys to his success is that he moves quickly, when he knows it's the right thing to do, he moves quickly and makes things happen. And so you've seen in a very short amount of time, Texas A&M University system, really build out the early stages of an energy proving ground. They down selected four providers to build commercial reactors at their RELIS campus in Bryan, Texas, about 3 or 4 months ago. I had the honor of being there for that. You know, all four companies are members of the alliance. It was Kairos Power, Natura Resources, which is based in Abilene, Allo Atomics, which is based here in Austin, and then Terrestrial Energy, which I'm trying to get to move to Texas. We'll see if we can get that to happen. But they were down selected to, you know, to build commercial reactors there. And, you know, we think that the fund that we just established is probably going to help make those, you know, a successful project. And I think that's really probably just the beginning for the RELS campus. So it's really, really exciting what they're doing. And frankly, the industry has needed that type of vision to say, okay, you know, enough talk, enough research. We know the tech. The tech works. It's time to build. And, you know, I think that is, that's what Chancellor Sharp has put into motion at A&M.
And so probably the biggest project in Texas right now that we hear the most about is X Energy with Dow Chemical, which has gotten a lot of federal funding. It seems to be going in a very positive direction. Can you give us kind of a 1,000-foot overview on where that's at?
Yeah, their application with the NRC was actually just accepted, I think, in May. They had just filed it back in April, so pretty quick turnaround, at least on the acceptance phase. And I think that's encouraging in terms of them getting through the NRC process, you know, more quickly, which, you know, both the NRC and the Trump administration, you know, are telling us is going to be a reality. That's a fantastic project. It was announced about 2 years ago that they would site it in Texas. It's down at their Seadrift site, you know, kind of outside of Houston. They're going to build four reactors to start. You know, X Energies are, you know, they kind of come in four packs. They're 80 megawatt small modular reactors, helium cooled. And, you know, they're going to build four there for a total, you know, capacity of, see if I can do my math right, 320 megawatts. They're going to use both the steam for the manufacturing process, you know, and the energy to power their site there. And, you know, I think probably also put some power back onto the grid to support, you know, Texas's energy needs. So, and in fact, I think, you know, I was in a very early meeting with the Dow CEO and the governor when the, you know, this project was just starting to be, you know, become public. And I think, you know, the governor's, I think almost first question was, well, can you build more than four? Because, you know, I think, you know, he's very excited about the potential for that, some of that energy to put back onto the grid. So, yeah, you know, that project is, I think, you know, also, you know, probably a likely applicant to the grant program that we set up. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we're going to see some very early successes. And that's, as you mentioned, it's one of several very exciting things that are not just ideas in Texas that, you know, A&M being one, Dow's project being another. And then, you know, there's a company, Natura Resources, based in Abilene, that received its construction license for its demonstration reactor about a year ago. And they're already starting to build that demonstration reactor. That's a molten salt, you know, small modular reactor. Very, very excited about, you know, their success. Their CEO, you know, I think has the right mentality that, you know, enough talk, enough research. We know the tech. It's time to build. You may hear me say that a lot. You know, that's kind of his mentality, you know, and I think it's Dow's mentality. You know, but Dow does big infrastructure projects. And so the people that are doing things in Texas, you know, all of them, whether it's A&M, whether it's Dow, or whether it's Natura Resources, you know, those three entities, you know, that their mentality is it's time to build. And, you know, you're seeing that translate into, you know, real progress with the deployment of, you know, nuclear.
Yeah, it's a very impressive collection of companies. Natura we had on the show a few episodes back, and very, very, very good professionals. They've got their head on straight. And the fact that they're using Abilene Christian University's research reactor is kind of a test bed for the larger deployment of the molten salt. You've also got two other molten salt companies selected to go to RELS. You know, Terrestrial Energy, I've known them for over a decade. Very, very competent. They've got one of the best board of directors and board of advisors in the industry. Very smart management team. They're out of Charlotte now. I good luck, you know, trying to lure them down to Texas. That'll be fun to watch.
I'm trying.
Yep. And then Kairos, you know, is doing really great work. They've got their you know, smaller demonstration reactors being built, and they're going to increasingly work up. So, and then of course, you and I met at the Alo Atomics unveiling in Austin a couple months back, where they actually have their small, you know, manufacturing facility, and they've got the actual, you know, prototype of the first reactor built. So those are all pretty impressive companies that you've got working with this RELS project.
Yeah, you mentioned, I think the theme in the companies you just mentioned is the theme of the first three projects we discussed. I mean, all three of those other companies, Allo, Kairos, and Terrestrial, they're same mentality. It's time to build. Kairos is obviously, already got a project underway. Allo Atomics, very quickly has spun up its manufacturing facility here in Austin, and the growth trajectory for all those companies is very exciting. And I think that's probably why those four companies were down selected by the university, is I think that they see what you and I see, which is builders, people that are going to make these projects go and make them a success.
There's nothing that beats that. So there's just a couple more I'll throw out there because we're not done yet with the list. You've got Oklo has signed a letter of intent with Diamondback Energy up in the Permian. I think it's 50 megawatts electric to help decarbonize basically their extraction work for petrochemicals. That's impressive. You've got Last Energy is looking to deploy, I think it's 30 of their 20 megawatt electric reactors up for a data center to the northern side of Texas. And then Blue Energy, which is looking to kind of actually deploy in the water using other techniques, a very innovative company. We've had them on the show. I think they've got a data center deployment in the works. So again, you're getting some really impressive, innovative companies coming to the state.
Yeah. I mean, Jim, we could fill a whole podcast talking about the companies that have interest in Texas. The announcements seem to be coming fast and furious. Almost seems like every week we're hearing something happen nationally. And, it seems like 50% of the things happening nationally are connected to Texas. And, you just to kind of tick over the ones you mentioned. I mean, I think one of the most intriguing things that's happening in the industry is the nexus with oil and gas industry. And certainly, the needs in the Permian Basin, if they're going to electrify the production out there are enormous. 17 gigs of power, I think, is the last estimate I saw from ERCOT. And, that's if you're going to try and build the infrastructure, in a more traditional way to power the needs out there, it is going to be very timely and very cost intensive. And so nuclear, I think, what Oklo is talking about doing out there with Diamondback is a very innovative solution to a very specific problem that, the oil fields, and I don't think the Permian is unique in this regard, this a very unique problem that they've got to solve. And I think nuclear is extremely well suited for that application. And that nexus between those two industries, which, at one time were foes many, many years ago, I think is a beautiful thing. And I think it speaks volumes about, the need for nuclear and I think the universal, almost universal understanding that we need to build more nuclear. The other project you mentioned in Last Energy's project in Haskell County, which is kind of in North Texas, is the other, application that, we're seeing probably the most of, which is to potentially power data centers. Nuclear, as you know, is pretty much the only energy source that's really going to accomplish the dual goals for that industry of having five nines of reliability, also maintaining a low or no carbon, power source. And so, certainly we think Texas, one of the reasons the nuclear is going to be so successful here are projects like Last Energy's project there. It's a very exciting landscape. And, I think the project that you mentioned last, also I think a data center project with Blue Energy is, I think that a very unique partnership down in, kind of the Victoria area, which has a history with nuclear. Ultimately, the reactor that was planned for that area didn't end up going. Certainly excited about what they're potentially you know, building down there as well. So, and like I said, it's fast and furious. I mean, there are others. It seems like we get outreach almost weekly about, you know, somebody wanting to build something in Texas.
And so for the companies that I have glossed over and forgotten to mention, my apologies, please give me an email, jim@youcanpower.org, and we'll get you on the show in the future if you want. But in the meantime, Clay, you had mentioned, Reed, you had mentioned this thing with DOD and putting nuclear reactors on military bases. That's common sense. That kind of makes sense. But now there's a push to put data centers on military bases or other government installations to kind of combine the two. So you're not talking about just needing one or two micro reactors. You're talking about, you know, much larger energy capacity. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Is that something you can see coming to the great state of Texas?
Yeah, I think people are already working on it. I mean, we've got a number of, you know, very large bases here. And I think even before these executive orders, the idea of utilizing those specific bases, at least in the minds of some, was, you know, something that folks were already working on. So I think the executive orders are really going to enable those projects to go. And I think, you know, military bases, you know, they need secure sources of energy, and they, you know, frankly, probably need to be their own little mini grid for national security reasons. The flip side of that coin is, you know, AI isn't just a, you know, potential technology tool for, you know, the common folks like you and me. It's a national security issue, and the ability, and I've been saying this, you know, even outside the context of military bases, you know, those two things are, I think, joined at the hip, and they will be. Those two things being AI data centers and nuclear are joined at the hip, and they will be. And it's a wonderful symbiotic relationship for the government to embrace, because if you solve the nuclear problem, you know, in order to power the data centers and win on AI, you're also restoring the U.S. to its rightful place as the leading exporter of nuclear energy, which in and of itself is a national security issue. Right now it's Russia and China, as you know, and if we want to continue to be the primary provider for, you know, secure energy for both the developing world and our allies, the only option that we have going forward is to regain our footing as the leader in nuclear, you know, exporting nuclear technology. And so this relationship between artificial intelligence and nuclear is really a, you know, killing two birds with one stone. If we make the right investments in nuclear, we will have the power to, you know, win the AI race, and we will simultaneously, as a byproduct almost of the AI conversation, regain our footing as the leader, the worldwide leader in the export of nuclear technology.
Well, we at UCAN Power cannot agree with you more on that. It's very well stated. I've got to ask, though, none of this is easy. You know, nuclear is expensive. It takes a long time to deploy, related to some other forms of energy. You know, what are the biggest challenges that are facing advanced nuclear deployment in Texas right now?
I think the primary issue for nuclear in Texas is the same issue as anywhere else, which is financial. And, you know, we, part of the reason that the work, you know, Jimmy and the working group made the recommendation on the grant fund was, I think, a recognition of the need to bring some seed capital to push the industry down the cost curve and accelerate its, you know, slide down that cost curve. That's what the grant program is designed to do. You know, we're hopeful that the federal government will recognize what we just talked about, Jim, which is the, you know, national security interest and the symbiosis with the artificial intelligence race that we're in, and also make similar investments. It seems like we're headed that way. You know, these are not, you know, this is not government largesse or corporate handouts. This is national security issue. And, you know, I think the state of Texas is recognizing that. I think the Trump administration is recognizing that. And, you know, I hope that Congress will as well. And so that's the issue. You know, we've got to find a way to bring some seed capital, some risk capital to de-risk some of these early projects so that we can slide micro reactors, small modular reactors, and yes, even large scale reactors down that cost curve so that they can be deployed in a way that it, you know, is economical.
Well, you're doing something right, because when you look at that list of the companies we rattled off that are, you know, either deploying or planning to deploy in Texas, it's a pretty impressive list. And, you know, so you're certainly putting in place the right, you know, mechanisms to attract them to do things in Texas. One of the things that we haven't talked about was in the executive order, one of the executive orders, we're talked about getting another 10 large light water reactors, you know, under construction or at least under contract by the end of the decade. You know, AP1000s probably, you know, massive units, but they are, you know, time tested, some of the best nuclear technology in the world. Do you see, is there any possibility of bringing some more AP1000 type units to Texas? Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, I'll say this, if we don't get at least four of those 10, we didn't do something right as a state. You know, we have two sites here, Comanche Peak outside of Fort Worth and South Texas Project down outside of Houston. Both of those sites, as you know, have two large scale reactors that are, you know, a gig plus each. And so we have four large scale reactors. Both of those sites were designed to have four total reactors. So there is space. And at one time, both of those sites were, you know, heavily engaged with the NRC, to license the other, two reactors at, you know, four reactors, two at each site. And so if we're not, you know, if we're not standing first in line for four of those, you know, 10 AP1000s, then, you know, we're doing something wrong. So I absolutely think it is, you know, Texas is the place to do it. We have the sites, we, you know, have got a political landscape that is favorable. And we have, you know, a will at the, you know, very tip top, state leadership to get it done. So, yeah. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that feels the need to pick a side on, you know, whether we're going to go with small modular or, you know, large scale, traditional large scale. I personally believe that there are use cases for both. They're both valid ways of bringing scale to nuclear. And, I am a proud American and a proud Texan, and I'm frustrated that, you know, we seem to have lost our ability to build large scale on time and on budget. And I don't think it's because we can't. I know that we can. And I think, you know, the Trump administration, I hope what is really animating that executive order is a demonstration of the will that, you know, we will deploy large scale reactors the way that we used to and the way that we still can if we decide we're going to do it.
So one of the things that you organize, and I think this will be your second iteration of this, is a Texas Nuclear Summit. But, and you've got another one planned for, is it October? Can you talk to about your plans for the next summit?
Yeah, we had a wildly successful one in November. You know, the feedback we got was, you know, I was blown away by it. I mean, this started as a very modest idea, you know, almost like a half day, you know, a conference room with 100 people in it. And, you know, the way that the industry has just taken off, it grew into almost 400 participants over a day and a half. And the feedback that we got from that summit was, I was blown away by it, you know, particularly given, you know, kind of where I started in my head with what it was going to look like. And so, yeah, we're doing another one in October, the 15th through the 17th. You can stick around for Austin City Limits or the F1 race, which is, you know, going to follow right on the heels of our summit. Great time. October is a great time to be in Austin. We've expanded it to, you know, a larger space. So we're anticipating, hopefully, you know, to grow the size of it by about 50%. I mean, I think my goal is to never for it to be too big. You know, I want it to be, you know, somewhat intimate, and I want to make sure that we've got the right people in the room. That was one of the positive feedbacks we got, is that just the type of people we had in the room was very high quality, you know, industry participants. And then look, I mean, it's built to be a cross section of the industry and, you know, the state ecosystem, that is going to be helping to deploy nuclear, whether that's, private capital, whether it's, legislative policymakers, whether it's our utility Public Utilities Commission. We anticipate having, you know, a very good participation, just like we did last year, from state leaders, so that the industry can interact directly with the folks that are going to, you know, be in charge of, you know, to use your words, shepherding these projects through, through the process.
Well, I hope a lot of our listeners will be there. I intend to be. TexasNuclearAlliance.org. You can find more information. You can sign up for the conference.
So Jim, I'll tell you that you can go to the alliance.org. Don't judge our website. I did that when the Alliance was just me. We have a reboot that is almost done, and so the website will be updated. And that's a good website for good information about the Alliance. We do have a summit specific one, which is www.nucleartexas.com. That's a great place to go for summit specific information. That'll have sponsorship opportunities, the ways to buy tickets. And as we build out the schedule of events and the participants, we'll obviously put those on that website as well.
Super. NuclearTexas.com. We will all be there. And thank you for that. So what's in closing, what's the most important message you'd like our listeners to take away from this conversation?
It's simple. It's time to build. We, for whatever reason, we don't need to rehash it, but for whatever reason, we stopped building nuclear. It was a huge mistake. We may have lost the muscle memory, but we know how to do big infrastructure if we want to. And, the reason I'm bullish on Texas and the reason I wanted Texas to lead this is because I think, we're made up of people who are builders and doers, and that's what this industry needs right now, is people who are going to decide that we're going to build nuclear, because it is not a capability issue. It's a will problem.
Well, Reed, thank you so much for your insights into what can best be described as a swirl of nuclear initiatives happening in Texas. There's a lot going on. We're grateful that you could kind of peel things back and provide clarity as to where things stand in the Lone Star State. So thank you very much.
Jim, thanks for having me. Appreciate what you guys are doing. This is a vital part of us being successful. So keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you. Well, folks, that wraps up this episode of the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. At UCAN Power, we believe that advanced nuclear technologies are key to powering the American economy in the years ahead. If you want to learn more about us, we're on social media and at www.ucanpower.org. Special thanks to the team at UCAN and our producer, Ms. Kimberly, for her dedication. If podcasting were hockey, her name would be all over the Stanley Cup. Until next time, this is your host signing off, with thanks to you for tuning in to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast.